You are listening to
Shmimcast,
a behind-the-scenes look at Improv Shmimprov from the perspective of its cast members and creators. For the latest episodes of
Shmimcast,
please visit www.shmimcast.com. To email us with your questions, comments, and requests, please shoot an email to shmimcast@aol.com, because we're archaic and we still have an AOL address. Seriously, was Shmimcast taken at Gmail? Is that... WTF. You can also hit us up on Twitter at the call sign at Shmimcast. That's twitter.com/Shmimcast. And of course, you can always come see Improv Shmimprov every Friday and Saturday night at 11 p.m. at the Maverick Theater in downtown Fullerton, California. For information on upcoming Improv Shmimprov shows, please visit improvshmimprov.com, spelled exactly how you think it would be. And now, the show must go on, so on with the show!
The following program contains scenes and language of a frank and explicit nature. Viewer discretion is advised.
Yeah. I wanna lay you back.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. You are listening to Shmimcast, episode number 5. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a fantastic show in store for you today. A guest that I never thought I would have. A celebrity of TV, movies, commercials, infomercials.
Kinda, sorta. Yeah.
A director, a producer, a renaissance man of the media age, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. Curtis Anderson is here.
Yay!
Also of Improv Shmimprov.
He does all these things, and occasionally he shows up for a show.
That's right.
That's the good... Wow, I feel like a really... Like, that's a really high sell. I feel like I really need to live up to something now. Now I feel too good for the show. I gotta leave.
No,
I'm gonna have my chauffeur pull around.
Yes.
The helicopter's gonna land in the pool.
Jeeves! Bring around the Batmobile. No, man. You know, what's cool about you is that you don't have that air of, like, I'm better than everybody, you know, because I've been these places. And
right.
You were, like, awesome enough to audition for Improv Shmimprov and go through the entire Improv Idol process, right?
It's true. Right? Yeah. Yes. Now you're making me blush.
You're
yeah.
like, oh, no, you should accept me into your team. I don't have to perform. You should just automatically put me on your website.
Like, right. Like, I'm worth my weight. I don't even know. I'm 140. 40 pounds of fucking gold. Absolutely. I was the 2008 Shmimprov Idol winner.
Yeah.
With Jesse Moriarty.
That's right.
And
another dude.
And I can't believe I don't remember
Sebastian,
who it was.
Sebastian, was it? Or was he
it
before?
It was Sebastian.
That was the year of Sebastian.
Yes, that was the year of Sebastian. The year of Sebastian. Like a year without a summer.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, the whole reason I even came out to the show was because mm-hmm. I was just reacquainted with Amber Queen.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. No. Fellow Shmimprover.
Totally. And she, before I was full-time, like, actory all the time,
mm-hmm.
I worked for Disneyland Entertainment.
Uh-huh.
And Amber was somebody that I hired and trained mm-hmm. back at Disneyland.
Oh.
And so we became friends there, but then, you know, I left and
so you were responsible for corrupting her?
Yeah. It's such a good job I did, apparently. Because could
the
somebody seriously
one.
Be more pure than the
yeah,
driven
I
snow?
I
actually think snow has more crap in it
right.
than Amber ever did. And I know that she's actually got the wool pulled over Improv Shmimprov's eyes quite a bit.
Oh,
because
sure.
a girl
oh, really?
From Lakewood,
mm-hmm.
girl,
oh.
she used to call it the wood.
The wood.
Like, yeah. And what nobody understands at Improv Shmimprov is that she is actually quite a drinker.
Oh, really?
I don't think people understand that about
she
her.
She just handles her alcohol well.
Extraordinarily well. And in fact, I got a funny story about Amber and
wow.
A party at my house. We were hanging out. It was a party, and it was me and my buddy Dean and Amber, a few other people, but they're not important to this part of the story. And Dean was feeling his oats,
mm-hmm.
and he was like, Amber, I will go shot for shot with you tequila right now.
Oh.
And I knew better because I used to party with her in the late 90s, right?
Right.
And now I'm giving away too much about our age. But we used to party in the late 90s, and I was like, dude. And he was like, no, she's little girl. I'm 6 feet tall. I know what's up. And I was like, all right. And she was like, huh, okay. They went shot for shot on mm-hmm. tequila. And sure enough, by like shot number 5, she was still, you know, prancing around like she was fine. And Dean was just like,
couldn't handle it.
Oh yeah, it was like in Indiana Jones. Where's the Lost Ark?
Right.
When, what's her name? And the old Tibetan guy and that thing.
That part.
So described.
And
so
then
well described.
He shot the guy and
then. It was all over.
I remember
and
that.
And then God came.
And then God.
And the angels came and melted faces. And that's what a party's like at my house. So, you know, it's a good time. Or Enrique's bathroom. So either way, somebody's face is getting melted off.
Raiders of the Lost Anderson. Right. Episode. That's something I really.
But
didn't
she
know
would
about.
Never. She would never let you.
Oh,
know
she'd
that.
Never fess up to that.
No, totally.
No way.
She might fess up to it.
Really?
But give her a bottle of wine first, which she could finish on her own from the bottle. To hell with the glass.
I have a feeling I'm going to learn so much in this episode about you and other people that I probably never knew.
Actually, I think so, because I don't know that you and I have really had a chance to hang out that much outside of, like, shows.
Not that much. I mean,
not
we had
really.
A beer once, you know, off years ago. Not years ago, but, like, I don't know, a couple years ago.
It feels like years ago. Yeah.
It was a long time ago. It was, like, one
actually,
or two
years
ago.
Actually, it might have been a couple years
ago. It was.
But I remember that's how often
we had a great time though. Yeah. I remember I was like chatting it up with you, and like my girlfriend at the time was like, "Oh, you and Curtis should be friends, and you should play together, and you should do March Madness together. It'd be fun."
Yeah, and like, then my ass got busy, and all of a sudden March I don't have time for this March Madness. What is March Madness?
But you did it. I think it was actually me that year. I wasn't into it or whatever. That was a year.
I think you
partnered up with Sebastian that year. Right? This is like
it's entirely possible. I did do a year with Sebastian, but honest to God, they all start to flow together.
Oh yeah. I
so
know.
I know I got in at the end of 2008, and then 2009 and 2010 just went.
Yeah.
I have no idea what happened.
Yeah,
when.
Yeah.
It's
just
this
like Amber's life, basically. Drink after drink after drink.
I don't know. I don't remember things. Yes. Who are you? I'm your husband, Gabe. I don't know what's going on.
I think the new catchphrase will be, "I've got Amber's blood."
Okay. I just downed a fifth of vodka, a keg of beer, and I'm fine. Just call me Amber Queen. So yeah, no, she's gonna give me so much shit about this now.
That's awesome,
this is
though.
Gonna go out on. She's gonna finally catch up on all the Schmimcast stuff. And after she gets through all the farts and everything, what are you talking about me for?
I know she was embarrassed when we talked about Enrique and her roast when he called her out about seeing her panties, and he was like, "I want to see the panties." So she did get
I
that
remember
one. She
that.
Got wind
now,
of that.
That was early in my Schmimprov career.
You were around at that time.
Yeah, okay, I mean, but like that was almost my first show. Like I had a show and then Amber's Roast. And the only reason I felt comfortable doing Amber's Roast was because she was like the only person I knew.
Right.
And then I realized, wait, I know all the stuff none of you people know. So when I realized that I knew things that did not fit in the Schmimprov persona of Amber Queen, all of a sudden my roast changed really quick.
Yeah.
And thank God for animal costumes.
Yes.
To make things a little bit easier to get down.
You made it special in your performance, and it's special coming out in that fucking costume.
It's like online, people. ImprovShmimprov.com, media, Amber's Roast. Mm-hmm. You can see me in a very colorful bird costume.
Yes, it's like a toucan, right? Basically,
it's a parrot.
It's a parrot.
On the bag, it says parrot.
That makes sense.
I'm going with parrot.
All right.
It's red and yellow and blue. Yeah.
If you didn't have a wife, I would think you were gay. But...
Totally. No, that's what most people think.
Hey, he's fabulous.
Years of working at Disneyland will affect you in ways.
I know how you got into that TV series, Mr. Anderson.
I wish I could fight you.
Just so you know, we've added some video links on Schmimcast.com to some of the entertainments we've discussed on previous episodes, such as Patrick and Jamie's Double Dare intro,
very funny.
As well as...
Do you have video of the color of Enrique's farts? Because... They are so potent, they create a cloud. It's horrifying.
It's just better to come to Schmimprov and see that in person.
But don't light a match. Dear God, don't light anything. The entire building will go up.
The second you get near the Maverick, please put all like...
Extinguish all cigarettes.
Yes.
Don't light any matches.
Mm-hmm.
Don't like answer your phone.
Oh, no.
Because just like at a gas station... One spark and boom, it's all gone.
That's right. Don't even think about fucking. the friction.
How do you do it? How do you? How many sparks are flying? I feel like we
don't
just saw
that's
a window.
The thing. That's the thing. I don't. And if it happened, there would be fucking mega sparks going on. Like at this point, I think
because
be
Nikki
like,
is a firework.
Exactly.
That's yeah. Wow. Wow. I just got a visual on that. That hurts. Are we gonna have video of that too?
Of the farts?
Well, no. Of Nikki fucking with sparks and like fireworks.
I think there should be. At
I
some
think
point.
There should.
Yeah, we have to work on that. That like, video department.
And by video, of course, we mean the webcam in the corner of your bedroom.
Yeah.
That constantly runs, just in case.
Wait, there's a webcam in here. Oh man, I'm really embarrassed.
It's all over now. Yeah.
There's video of me reading my Batman comics naked into the microphone. You're like, why is
he
doing that?
Do you read it with the voice?
Yeah.
Do you read it? Riddler, you better stop making riddles. Riddle me this, Riddler. I just punched your face.
This isn't a good time, Penguin. I caught you masturbating, McGee. And now that's something to laugh about.
Yeah.
No Again. Wonder you need all the plastic, bad freak.
I don't know.
You can't see my face.
Yeah. But, I don't know.
But my face just went, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
I don't know. I can't
Wow, that was
like,
hardcore.
I just said what came into my mind. That's all. That's my only explanation. Holy shit.
Oh, wow.
Well, yeah, so thank you for listening, folks. I think that's the
that was the Schmimcast. And
and we'll have videos. Apparently, there'll be a live webcam link on my website that you can see interesting things happening. Apparently, it's like a panda Lord. Cage that yeah. they have a cam on.
I got cold cream on this side of my face. And I cry with mascara so I look all raccoony. And then I just eat honey and bamboo. That's it. That's... Panda bears don't eat honey, do they?
I don't believe so.
Yeah.
But that's a nice image.
You know, I was going to bring a six-pack of beer as like just an offering
and be like,
hey, let's loosen up for the show. No.
Yeah. We don't need it, right?
Don't need it. No, yeah. this is stone sober, people.
Yeah.
That's the problem. Yeah. That's all right. At least you're reading Iron. I mean, you're reading Batman in bed. I'm reading Iron Man in bed. I've got the wife next to me and she's
like.
You're
a big Iron Man fan.
I am a huge Iron Man fan. Ever since 83.
Nice.
I even remember my first issue was 171.
Oh.
And it was during the original run where Stane took over Stark Enterprises. And this is really inside baseball for people who don't give a shit about Iron Man. But at the time, Jade Rhodes was in the armor and Tony Stark was a drunk. And that fits in really nice because for a long time, I was a drunk.
Oh.
So, that was supposed to be a joke. Crap.
Oh,
now
okay.
I brought it down.
All right.
And,
you're a crack addict?
Yeah, completely.
This is going to be a deeper episode than I imagined.
And now I'm going to do my AA pitch. But
Schmimcast. So more about Curtis.
Hey!
Yes, I want to know all about Curtis. Okay, we know you're a funny guy. Like, where did performance and or the comedy come from in your life? Like, were you a funny child? Where does it come from?
I actually got started really young performing. My parents tell me from times when I don't remember that I was a talkative child even before words were forming. So I used to just jibber jabber.
Right.
And they could tell I was telling stories because I was nodding my head and moving around.
Yeah, yeah. You're like a little baby Italian.
Yeah, totally.
Pasta.
I actually got my start in kindergarten doing like school shows and stuff. And I was the Baa Baa Black Sheep in the nursery rhyme play that they were doing then and made old women cry.
Wow.
With the sincerity of, yes, sir, three bags full. And
so
apparently from that moment on, it was just over.
Right.
But that was in the Midwest. That was in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And we moved out to California in 1985.
Mm-hmm.
My dad got transferred from his company.
About how old were you at that point?
I moved here when I was 7 turning 8.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so almost right away started doing theater.
Mm-hmm.
And originally it was something, I mean, we just moved here. It was the middle of the school year. I was starting to make friends, but it's hard when there aren't that many kids on your street. And, you know, you don't know people yet well enough yet to go to, like, their houses and stuff. And so by the time summer came, which was relatively soon after we moved, I really didn't have anything to do. So my parents were like, well, you liked that acting thing before, so why don't we do that here? And so I started doing community theater right away and started working professionally not that long after.
Really?
Yeah, I just knew it was something I wanted to do. And my parents have a story that I saw a friend of mine that was acting on TV and I said, I want to do that. But I know from my own memory that I knew it before then. So when I was 8, I was like, I want to do this. And they found me a manager, a very nice woman named Phyllis Henson, who is still in the business now. Mm-hmm. She works out of Irvine. And that got me my first agent at the Savage Agency. And you know, it was a different world back in the late 80s. So
sure,
it was,
yeah.
And when you're starting young, it's usually easier. From then, it was just, I just started working.
Just boom, boom.
Yeah.
So you got like TV spots or like commercials?
My first audition was for MetLife commercials when the Peanuts cartoons were pitching.
Oh, yeah,
when
it was
all the Peanuts characters, not just Snoopy. And it was my first audition. There's a rule of thumb, especially for kids. It's like 30 auditions for every job. You know, so you should expect to go on 30 auditions before you get that first job.
Right.
So I went on my first audition. My dad and I walked out and he was like, that's one, 29 more to go. And we actually got a call later that night. I booked it. So I booked my first job right away.
Boom.
And I was like, well, this is easy. I don't see what the problem is. Why aren't people doing this all the time? And actually, I started in voiceover, and that started my run. I did the Peanuts series until 1989 or 1990.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the voice of Schroeder on that. For all the MetLife commercials and everything, there was a special called This Is America, Charlie Brown. I was Schroeder and all of that. And then right after my voice started to change, that's when they started doing the cartoons and stuff. But we used to redo voices for some of the older stuff sometimes. And I remember there was something about Canada,
mm-hmm.
and they had the new voices redub stuff. So I remember redubbing, you know, the Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown and stuff like that. Now, I don't remember which shows we did, so it's hard to remember exactly.
Yeah, he's like, they just hand you a script and they're like, read this.
Yeah.
More or less.
And you know how the kids talk on those Peanut shows, and it's always like, hey, Charlie Brown, mm-hmm. why don't we kick the football?
Right.
And it always sounds like the kids are kind of being dumb. Or it just sounds like they don't know what they're doing. Well, it's not so much. They actually have you do it that way on purpose. And for a lot of cartoons like that, especially in the 80s and the 70s and stuff, they would have you just do sound bites and samples.
Yeah,
totally.
Nice.
Sound bites and samples so that they could just grab an edit for whatever they needed and they could just plug it in. And so if you keep it flat and simple, then they could take whatever part of whatever line and fix something if they needed to later.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, that's why cartoons, especially in like the 70s and 80s, were not really that expressive, or they were really repetitive.
Mm-hmm.
Like Scooby-Doo, Fred has a very distinct way of talking so that he only has to go in once a week. You know what I mean? And they can cut together anything else they need out of that. And I mean, I can't confirm that for like things like Scooby-Doo, but that's the general tenor.
So it's all about the post-production. Like, totally. Let's make it easy on ourselves.
Totally. Yeah,
which I could probably learn some lessons on.
Well, you learn so much. I mean, I've been working professionally for 26 years now. There is so much that you find out, like, the days the actors show up for work, like movies, when you hear reports about movies going for like 6 months, 18 months, whatever, that's just when the actors are involved on set. You got to imagine there's double that time beforehand and double that time after before a movie is really working.
Oh, I'm sure.
So, and post-production is where so much of your money gets eaten up.
Yeah.
So anything to make that cheaper or faster is totally
what
you're doing. So,
I remember, I was hearing Kevin Smith say something about working with Bruce Willis and how like Bruce Willis would kind of add extra dialogue into some of the scenes, and Kevin was like what's this extra dialogue,
you know?
And he was like, oh, you'll thank me later when you're editing it, you know,
right.
Like
totally.
Basically
totally.
It's gonna make your job easier in the editing room. Like, that line was in from an earlier scene. He's like, just trust me on this. And then Kevin Smith apparently later on was like, he was right.
Well, and it can seem very asshole-y at times. I mean, it really can. It really can. I mean, there's a reason this business is known for dicks and bitches. But you know, when you've done it for a certain amount of time, and especially a certain kind of storytelling, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You just know. There's a value to experience, and it's one of the few industries left where apprenticeship is still like a big deal.
Uh-huh.
Because experience counts so much more.
Yeah.
Like the nitty.
The
I can go to film school.
The fact that you've actually done some shit, like,
it
just matters.
What happens on the ground is more important than necessarily what's going on in the technical aspect.
Yeah.
Film school can teach you all about the technical, but it's only the experience of doing it or people who have done it for a certain amount of time that really gives you the information you need. Because a creative guy with a flip camera can make a decent movie.
Right, right.
But giving a guy a Panavision and a full lens set and truck doesn't mean you're going to have a good movie. It just means you spend a lot of money on equipment you don't know how to use.
Right, right.
So experience is a big deal.
Like if you threw me on a movie set, I would be like I'm on another planet. Like
right? I can dig it.
What's going on?
Well, and you've got
here,
so many departments and so many things all happen at the same time. What was that? Was that your phone?
That was the aliens calling.
Oh, that's okay. That's, I didn't turn my phone on silent. I'm waiting for the generic BlackBerry ring to happen at any moment.
Is that going to make you excited?
It totally is. I'm going to be like, look how important I am. They called me during the Schmimcast. I warned them on Twitter that I would be doing this, and they called me anyway.
That's awesome.
And then we'll just put it on speaker. If it's somebody famous, we'll put it on speakerphone.
Oh, yeah.
If it's not, we totally won't.
That would be so cool.
That would be crazy, right?
Like,
I don't even know who to say, because I don't want to put them on blast or anything. I don't wanna, hey, Russell Brand, what are you doing calling me right now? Are you plugging Arthur? You should do that to the Schmidt. How many people are listening to the show right now? Like 15?
Who knows? Maybe something. I mean, I don't know. It's probably just us Schmimprovers. Honestly, I have no idea. Like, I mean, I can see that it's been downloaded, and that's about it.
Do they announce it at Schmimprov yet? The fact that there's a Schmidtcast?
No,
they should really do that. They should really do that.
I think they're embarrassed or something.
Sure. Screw them. Screw them. Next time I'm at a show,
I'm really not sure. I mean, I know that they advertise it on Facebook, but that's... I don't see what it could hurt. Like, I mean, if you know what a podcast is, that's great. You might go seek it out and see, okay, I'll be interested.
Well, not only that, but these shows, especially, and this is me talking because I've listened to the first four shows now.
Right.
But talk about getting insight into the minds of the people behind the show.
Right.
And like we were talking about earlier, so much more to Patrick than the leprechaun.
Yeah.
And you get that out of his episode.
Yes.
You know? And,
yes.
And I really feel like...
That's true. You really get to like...
You get to like people.
Know the people.
Or
better,
you get to learn about Enrique Schwartz.
Or you get to hate them, yes.
Yeah. But you know the Monkees show in the 60s.
Maybe
some of
the
listeners
show.
Are too young for that.
Yeah, yeah.
But the Monkees had the TV show, and when the pilot first got aired in the 60s, it didn't do very well, and they didn't know what to do about it. But they found out if they played the screen tests in front of the show, people got connected to the guys
seeing,
as guys.
They're seeing them behind the scenes.
Right.
Yeah,
and they ended up playing that, and then the pilot, next thing you know, it's a huge hit. And I feel like this podcast could actually really do that for Schmimprov too. I mean, because there are definitely favorites.
Right.
You know, if you're playing against Nate or Jamie or Ryan Clark, you're probably going to lose. And you could have the best show of your night. You could be pulling shit out of
that's
your ass that's funnier than things that are funny.
Yeah.
And it won't matter because Ryan Clark will be like, I raped a baby. And then it's all over.
Yeah.
And
I mean, I feel that. I get that feeling sometimes. There's definitely favorites, which is...
it's completely understandable. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's great because their people are connecting and they want that.
Yeah,
and they're
like,
I get your humor.
Right, right.
I'm here for you.
Yes, yes.
But with something like this where you could talk about the rest of the cast and everything, and a lot of it is just people don't necessarily take the time to connect with the rest of the cast. I mean, why do those guys have such a following? They've been in almost every show.
Yeah.
You know, Nate and Jamie are in every single show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ryan Clark really commits to making sure that he's around.
Yes.
For a guy like me, I got to ride on the fact that I'm on TV because I am not doing that many shows lately. You know? Even my TV stuff's hard to come by nowadays. It's been a while since 98.
Right,
so,
right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, it is tough. You have to find some way to connect, I guess.
Yeah. And this is just really neat because you can really get into the personalities of people. And
And for me, I just want us to connect, too. It was funny because last episode, Patrick said, there's some guy on Schmimprov that got in last year, and I've never met the guy.
Yeah.
And so today, Spencer said, I listened to the episode, and I figured I should introduce myself to Patrick on Facebook. And Patrick wrote it back.
That's the magic.
That is. I was like,
and then
I was like, I'm very glad that Schmimcast is helping people connect.
It's true. It's totally true. And I am a big podcast advocate anyway.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I feel like it's the talk radio of the modern era. You know, you can really focus in on what you like and you can get a really broad range of things.
Sure. You can learn stuff.
Absolutely.
About, you know, you've always wanted to know or never wanted to know or whatever, you know, I mean.
And without having to worry about advertisers or things like that necessarily.
Or like censorship.
You could have a real debate. You could talk about real things.
Sure.
Yeah. I could sit here and go, fuck shit, fuck. You know? And it's okay.
It's okay, because we're talking about fucking and shitting. So there you go.
Exactly.
But it's a great medium, and I'm just really excited that you've taken the opportunity to really jump on this.
It just sounded like, you know, I mean, it just seemed like a fun idea.
I blame Kevin Smith entirely, though. I blame your love for Kevin Smith
yes.
for what's happening now.
This is all Kevin Smith's fault, but not like I know him, but, you know, it's
I get it. Totally, you go to the Smod Castle. I see how it is. You were ready to watch Red State.
Yes.
Yeah, you were ready to go. You'll pay $80 for that ticket.
But I've already seen it, so I don't have to.
Oh, well, never mind.
I paid $100.
Oh, crap. Did you really? You got the big pass thing.
I got the
big... Now we're totally plugging Smod Castle.
Right, right.
Are we getting money for this? Seriously, right. Smith, pass it along. So entertainment is my business, right?
Yes.
That's my job. I don't have another day job. That's what I do. And so a lot of it is the search for monetization. And the old models don't really exist anymore. I mean, they exist, but even major studios who have all that backing, they can't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's why you're seeing $100 million CGI fest, another $100 million CGI fest, crappy kid movie.
It's like that Sucker Punch movie was all about the, you know, I mean, literally was all just about spectacle. Like, the story was...
Did you see it?
I saw it yesterday.
I haven't seen it yet, but I'm really concerned and have been. And it's one of those things where, like, the film blogs are talking about this is the symptom of the fall of mainstream Hollywood. And it's easy.
I it would be scary if every movie's like that. But I mean,
give it time.
Schmimcast.
Let's talk about your involvement with Schmimprov. So you heard about Schmimprov from Amber?
Heard about Schmimprov from Amber, and I was going through a new time in my life.
Yeah,
I'd just gotten divorced.
Oh. Oh, man.
And was
the
living
big D.
Yeah, totally. Oh. And I started producing in 2005, got divorced in 2006, and wanted to start doing talent stuff again. I wanted to start acting again in addition to the production work that I was doing. I'd been out of the game for a really long time.
Now, did you have a lot, like, I know you did stage work and you did stuff on camera. Like, did you have improv, or did you take, like, workshops, or how did your comedy stuff come about?
I should really dial this back. So I started doing theater and stuff when I was seven out here, and that's really when I start counting everything.
Right.
And then started doing professional work when I was eight. And the first thing my agent had me do was start taking an acting class in LA. And it was pretty standard, esoteric, like what you would imagine a poppity schmoppity acting class would be like. So
was
we did
like
a lot of breathing,
a lot of voice work,
and learned how to talk about ourselves. And I was in a
room.
So
it was like
teenagers.
A real acting class. It wasn't like a let's learn how to do auditions.
Right.
Or,
from a very early age, I was introduced to very advanced ideas that I did not understand. but when you do them, you can kind of get it. Action always tends to lead to work. So I did that acting class, and we did some very basic improvisation stuff, mostly just making things up and getting outside the box.
Yeah.
But then I joined Diane Hill Hardin's acting space, young actor space in the Valley, and I studied with Stephen Haves for a long time over there. Maybe it was only a couple years, but it feels like it was a really long time. And I had a great experience with them.
Yeah.
They really knew how to introduce acting to kids. A lot of their techniques are things that I still use. I teach acting now, and a lot of their techniques are things that I still use. And one of the things that we focused on to get us loosened up and everything were improv games.
Right.
So a lot of the games that we play in Improv Shroom Improv as a show were things that I learned as a warm-up to get us ready for the more emotional stuff and things like that. And I did a decade of musical theater. So when you do that, I mean, especially when you're working with a lot of kids, the directors use a lot of improv games to get them warmed up and focused. So I had learned improv.
Yeah.
I knew the basics of it from kid training, but then didn't really focus on improv again until college. So I went to Chapman University and studied under Michael Nehring. He's great. I love him and credit him with a great deal of why I can act the way I do now, even though I don't get to show it off very much lately. We did a lot of different work. And so improv has always been in my thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And when I was in high school, I was part of the comedy sports team, and we did improv competitions and things like that. And I remember very specifically an improv competition at the Thespian Conference that was in Stockton, California. And we did a game, and I was very good at my school. I was good for my group. But for the first time, I saw people who were just very good and totally got served.
Yeah.
And that's when I started to realize just how deep improv could be.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it was years later when we would do serious improv in acting class where you weren't supposed to be funny.
Mm-hmm,
you were just
mm-hmm.
given like a situation, now make your scene.
Exactly.
That's when you learn how deep it can really go. And
yeah.
One of the reasons why I like Oscar-winning moments so much.
Yeah,
because you can really, let's just take it to a dark, dark place and and then fart joke. Dark Place, and then fart joke. So
I'm tempted to play your clip of Oscar winning moment with Enrique from last year.
Do you want to play it right now? I didn't even know you had it. Yes.
I don't think we've played any clips from an Oscar winning moment game yet on Schmimcast. In case you're listening and don't know what it is.
It's a scene.
Yes,
with two people, and they're in a place. It's just a regular scene, but at any moment, a host can yell, Oscar winning moment, player. Mm-hmm. And that player then needs to go into a monologue that would win them an Oscar, which means it's probably going to be about cancer or AIDS or a dead child or
exactly.
something.
Some kind of traumatic.
And then when it reaches its apex, they say thank you, and the scene moves on, and you have to justify from there. I forget where we were.
I think you're at a spa.
Yes, we were at a spa.
Correct, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get Drew's bit here where he
Oh, screw Drew.
It.
No, no.
Seriously.
No, we know it's
an Oscar movie after a warm round of applause.
How are you doing,
buddy?
Thanks, bud. I like being able to wag it free here.
That was a sight gag of me using my forearm as my penis.
Oh,
since
yeah.
you walk around a spa naked.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
what did he say? Nice
balls. Okay. It's Enrique. He was talking about my balls.
All right. Yeah. I was going for clean. I thought maybe he didn't say nice balls.
No, he totally did. He totally did. But that's all right, because you can't understand it.
Yes.
So it's all right. There are no penis references at all at this point. We're fine. But we are naked at the spa.
Oh, good.
Until I put on a towel.
Fantastic.
Yes.
Just a little impulse of comfort, Mr. Man.
I'm sorry.
Wait, why am I sorry? You're the one who touched my balls.
You're the one having them all out.
I'm appropriate inside the spa.
I guess we just should have waited. It explains itself.
Yeah. Toosh, sir.
Now, except for that small bit of awkwardness, I would rather have a buddy in the sauna than be there myself, because I tend to pass out.
All right, man.
All right.
Go.
Let's do it. Okay.
Awkward moments.
But it's completely platonic, okay?
Uh-huh.
I don't want this to be like the last one. It was really rough. I went in. It was a good buddy of mine. My best friend, in fact, Mike. You know, he was a really supportive guy. He was there when I proposed to my wife. He was there on our honeymoon, which was weird, but it was okay. And then we went to the spa at the hotel, and he followed me into the sauna, and I was okay with that because, you know, I don't like to be alone. The whole reason I got married was because I really don't like being by myself, and I really need the security of knowing that somebody's going to be there no matter what, right? And Mike was there, and my wife couldn't be in there, and then while we were in there, he saw me pass out, but instead of getting me out of the sauna, the cucumbers that were on my eyes.
Thank you.
So that gives you like a really good example of a mixture of dramatic and comedic improv all at once.
And I hope you noticed that it looked like I was going for the butt sex joke and then turned it around.
Yeah.
Because our audience is always ready for anal sex. There is no point when this audience isn't ready for anal sex.
That is true.
Yeah.
It's interesting because you don't think about, especially when you're not an actor, you haven't gone through training, you don't think about dramatic improv really, or that it, you know, it would exist. It's like, why did people
yeah,
do that?
Sometimes.
Why would you do that? Why would you like?
Why would you not yourself, just be funny?
Yeah. Why would you put yourself through that?
There have been other Oscar-winning moment times when I don't go for the joke. Period. And you get those awkward laughs of people like, "Is this supposed to be funny?"
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm supposed to be laughing at this. There were a couple good ones with Sean Cattu when it was just when we just played it straight. The audience was like, "I don't feel good anymore."
I'm disturbed.
And I enjoyed it. but I don't know if it was so good for the show.
Who were the people who hosted the Oscars this year?
That was James Franco and Anne Hathaway.
They show up with your Oscars at the end of the
totally.
Game, right?
Isn't that the best part? Yeah, actually, James Franco might show up.
Yeah,
to a Schmimprov show.
You never know.
You never know.
Jose Canseco did. Did you
I
know
actually
that?
Know Jose Canseco.
You met. You know,
we used to play celebrity basketball together.
That's so funny.
Yeah,
and apparently he's friends with Ryan Clark's dad.
That does not surprise me.
He's come twice, I guess.
No kidding.
Yeah, yeah. Apparently
always nights when I'm not there. Whatever.
Yeah,
yeah.
You're like. like, oh, hey. Oh,
hey, Jose.
Hey, we used to be friends.
Right.
We used to play b-ball.
I don't know if I can say we're friends, but yes, totally. Totally.
Schmimcast. That was a very fun game of Oscar Mayer. I enjoy it. I especially enjoyed the eating the cucumbers off the face. Like, I kind of lost it at that point. I was like, oh shit, Curtis is going to win. He could have gone for the butt joke.
I feel bad. I should have gone for the butt joke, but I went for something else. And then I really went up for Donish, didn't I?
You,
and
of course.
No, and I should almost feel bad about that.
What?
I don't know, because everybody seems to hate Donish, and I feel like I'm never quite on board the Donish hate train.
That's fine. I mean, you guys were there for Donish. I mean,
it's true. And he did have emergency surgery.
And we didn't even talk about it. I forgot. We should have said something about that. But
Donish, his appendix burst. He had to go to surgery. So, yeah. I mean, that's the story.
That's what happened.
That's the story. That's what happened. He almost died. That's what happened. He sent his girlfriend to the show to make sure that the show happened anyway. He almost died. That's what happened. Poor Hannah.
He was. I'm sure he was really upset he couldn't play. Like, I mean,
oh,
that was,
I bet.
Spent all this time and on this intro.
I was talking to him up until like an hour before he passed
surgery?
Out.
I'm sure.
And he was like, "Oh, I'm busy doing this. I'm busy doing that." And I'm like, "Damn, dude. All right. Is there anything I can do?" And he was like, no. Just show up at the time." And then I get the text later from everybody. Donish is dying. Can somebody cover his spot? And at once it was like, "Oh no, that's awful. Wait, is it insensitive that we're still playing?"
Well,
and it's conflicting.
It was appendicitis. I mean, if it was something more serious, I think we would have had to have second.
We still play.
What could we
still
have done? What would we literally? What good could we have been?
We could have done surgery on stage. That's a show.
Oh crap!
Yeah, with a butter knife and like a popsicle.
Surgery on stage.
That'd be hardcore. Wait, we don't have that machine. It would just be you standing in a corner making that noise.
Foley
artist, and you'd just be guessing.
Yeah, it'd be awesome.
You'd be guessing whether or not he was still. Is he okay still? Is he still breathing? I don't know. But and he's okay now, which is why we could joke.
Yes,
about
we all are happy that Donish is good.
And it sounds like they did really well the second week. Does anybody know?
Oh, that's tonight.
That's tonight?
Yes. You're not standing in because you have somewhere to go, right?
I've got another place I got to be. Well, you know, Hollywood actor, got to go to parties.
Yes.
And this is an
important
party.
I bet you James Franco and Anne Hathaway will be there
only. If only.
And Christopher Nolan and Danny DeVito.
I don't talk to Christopher Nolan anymore.
You don't?
No, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
I didn't like Inception. I didn't get it.
I didn't get. Why couldn't he just be dreaming? Chris, seriously, where's Batman?
Yeah, I know.
I thought it was the worst Batman movie he's ever done. I don't know why he was never in costume.
Yeah, it wasn't what I was expecting.
Yeah, and Joseph Gordon-Levitt was the worst Robin I've ever seen.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't get it.
But he could make things rotate, like whole buildings and shit.
Actually, he didn't.
He didn't?
No, remember? That was because they were falling.
Oh.
They were going through their kick in another level of the dream.
So Robin doesn't even have powers, really.
No! No, well, he wrapped things up real nice with a power cord.
Yeah, he should.
Yeah,
great.
Robin.
Yeah. Ooh, I can wrap people to an elevator.
No, sir, I can do that. You know, you
Anyone
just ask my
that.
Wife.
God.
We'll get her on speakerphone. So getting back to the question, so I wanted to get back into the talent side.
Yeah.
And the best way to do that is to get to class. But I didn't have time for class. But Amber was like, well, you could totally audition for the Schmimprov thing. And right now, if you're auditioning for commercials, improv is the thing you got to do.
Yeah.
And do I want to go try and get into the Groundlings? No. Do I want to go try and get into Upright Citizens Brigade? No, because they're going to try and make me take classes. And I've done classes. So I figured, and it's also been a really long time. I didn't really know how good I was going to be. And honestly, driving to Fullerton when you live in Brea is way better than driving to LA and you don't know what you're going to do. And it was a little intimidating, honestly, because Schmimprov is a well-known team. You know, it's got a lot of cred behind it, and it is funny people. And I watched a show the weekend before the auditions and had a great time. And I was like, this would be really neat. This would be really cool.
Yeah.
And I like the people. And that night it was Amber and Clark and Nate. And I think Jamie was in that show too. And so it was a really good mix of people as well. Yeah. Going into the audition, I was like all nervous. I brought a headshot and a resume and everything. And I was like, I don't know how this is going to go. And everybody was just really cool. And then the audition went and I did all right. I don't know. Were you there?
I wasn't at the audition at all. No.
Because I honestly, it's all blank now.
Yeah, gotcha.
No memory except of what happened. I just did it. I walked out and they were like, yeah, come to the Idol. And then I won Idol.
It was like
that
Memento movie and Joe Pantoliano at the end. Just
totally.
Whacked.
Right? Totally. Yeah. It's just all gone. It's all gone. Yeah. Talk about a bad Batman Batman in that one too.
Yeah, Jesus.
I mean, jeez.
The prequel.
I know, the prequel about how he forgot about how his parents died.
Exactly.
But yeah.
Now, I remember the first time I think I ran into you, you were at my house.
Where we used to do warm-ups.
It was a prep for one of the shows, I think. And I came in with my girlfriend, once again, at the time. And you had this, like, this smile on your face, this, like, kind of smirk. Like, you're just...
I was very happy to be there.
You have a very...
I was very happy
very,
to be there.
It's very, like, you just have this particular, like, smile most of the time. Like, that.
You're making me blush, man.
And it gives me a hard-on. I was like... But no, but anyway, like, I was like, oh, that guy seems very confident. And
actually, no, wait, but let me replay that for you. In his head, that's a dick.
No.
What a cocky asshole.
No. I remember my girlfriend was like, who is that? Like, I was like, I don't know. He's like, somebody new, you know? And she's like, oh, I know that person. I know him. I know him. I'm like, okay, where do you know him from? Like, that's great. That's great. He's like, he's been on TV. We, like, walked through, because I wasn't part of the rehearsal that night, so we just walked right into my room and we looked you up. I don't know. We looked up Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
That's the glorious Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then she's like, I know it. I've seen him on TV on Sabrina. I was like, oh, hallelujah. That's, why is he here? Like, and then that was the first question of mine. I was like, that poor guy. Like, no.
No, that was the same thing Eric Furheim asked me.
Did he really?
Actually, yeah, he was like,
why would you go to...
I looked you up, and I was like, hey, it's pretty neat that he's here, but why is he here? and it's, you know...
But in my mind, it's totally cool. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I'm just like, oh, that's really cool that you're humble enough not to be like, oh, I would never do that. You know, I would, like, put in the commitment and time to be in, you know, an improv group that's like...
And this is where I would argue with you that that Schmidprov is actually pretty humble, because
that's true.
It does have the benefit of being near where I live. And in 26 years of working in Hollywood, I've never lived in LA because I just don't like it. So, I mean, there's that. But that discounts the bigger thing, which is that this is actually a really good group of people. It's a very funny show.
It's well organized.
Yeah,
the organization
is
pretty decent. And,
there's
you know,
there's
we've got
no
a,
reason.
Got a website.
Yeah.
It's well, been a, we've been
totally,
around.
It's been
for
around.
A long time.
Totally.
Yeah.
And there's no reason why Schmimprov couldn't be something like UBC or Improv Olympics or Groundlings. It's just that we're down here
and we don't charge people for classes.
although that might change. Shut up. But no, seriously, I mean, it's the quality is high.
Yeah.
And in my head, the cost benefit analysis before I really understood what Schmimprov was was worst case scenario, I get to practice doing improv again.
Right.
And I'm around for a couple weeks, and if it sucks, I leave.
Right.
You know, and best case scenario, which is where it went, it's going to be a great exercise. I'm going to get back into the flow of things, and it's going to be awesome shows that people are really going to enjoy. And, you know, I'm not super famous, but people recognize me from Sabrina. People love me in the Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen's Winning London for the small part that I was in it. And now...
And Pearl Harbor, right?
And 15 seconds
as
of Pearl Harbor. And seriously...
Do you have lines, or you just...
I did, but they don't end up in the movie.
Oh, bummer.
It was a very nice scene with Dan Aykroyd.
But
in the end, and here's where, you know, like, ego has to play out against story.
Yeah.
I've been doing this long enough. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. If I don't have any, it doesn't really matter.
Right.
As long as it serves the story. And my sweaty head for 15 seconds does more than me talking to him about burped right. Call me Enrique!
Well, no wonder they cut your line.
I know.
You
I just burp all the time. So,
understood.
A lot of people know me from Pearl Harbor, but it's always like,
it's funny.
I don't do anything at Pearl Harbor but sweat and tight. I was on Sabrina for 3 years.
Yeah.
So people recognize me from that stuff. But now in Orange County, it's just as common to walk in somewhere and somebody be like, oh my God, you're an improv. I went to the OC Fair last year and got a funnel cake because I do that.
Yeah.
And
that's how you roll.
Totes. And the girl behind the counter was like, oh my God, you're an improv. And like got all shy about it. And I was like, yeah. It's cool. Okay. So yeah,
that's
so
really cool. I don't get that ever.
People know it. You just don't go out enough. That's because you're either at the theater or you're here.
No, I don't
know. Or the comic store. Hey, where is your comic shop? Where's your shop?
If I go and look for stuff, I usually look for the novels. I go to Barnes & Noble.
Dig it.
And I have like a lot of old comics that I inherited from my family. So I've slowly started to go through and see like, these are worth any money? No, they're not. Oh, well, I'll keep them. Another decade, I'll check. I do enjoy him. I just, even with reading books, I don't know what it is. I have the hardest time getting through anything. Books, novels, and stuff.
I have the exact same problem. Yeah. As a producer, I should be reading scripts all the time.
Yeah.
I'm horribly behind. Mm-hmm. I finished a script a couple days ago that I had been sitting on for 15 months.
Holy shit.
It was good.
So that script I was going to show you.
Right,
this,
exactly. Yeah, I'll get to it. Yeah. And it's not so much, it's just that I delay actually doing it. Because it doesn't take that long to do it. But
I don't have time for that shit. I'm like in a competition of reading Lord of the Rings, and I...
That is like the hard one to
they are
to get into. I mean, that's like reading the Bible.
I did get through The Hobbit, though, which I had read before, but that was...
You were very good in The Hobbit, by the way.
Oh, thank you very much.
If people don't know, Nick played The Hobbit in The Hobbit.
I was The Hobbit in The Hobbit.
And it was a very good show. And that's coming back, right? That's going to be done somewhere else?
God,
or
I hope
do
so.
It again?
I hope so.
That'd be nice, because that was good.
Something about doing it next year, but I don't know.
Oh, that'd
when.
Be good.
I'd probably...
They're going to recast anyway.
Who fucking knows?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you put Drew in there as Bilbo.
Right?
Yeah.
Right?
Oh. Schmimcast!
So, what are you up to these days, basically?
I still act, but very little. I primarily produce films now. Right now, my wife and I are working on a documentary about plastic surgery.
Ooh.
And focusing on the doctors, how they get their training, and why they do it in the first place. And unfortunately, we found out just how many people really aren't qualified to do it.
Oh, great.
And we expect to have that done in the summer. And our director on that is also working with me on
Michael Moore?
No, his name is Zeke Pinero.
Aha!
But he and I are working on another film called Cheerleaders Must Die,
mm-hmm.
which is a follow-up in the Must Die series, because we had Stupid Teenagers Must Die come out in 2007, which is not very good. But if you like slasher movies and you like drinking, it's a good combination. It's available on Amazon.com.
Oh, it sounds like fun.
Yeah, it's a good time. I know you can stream it on Netflix for free mm-hmm. with your subscription, but I highly suggest getting the DVD, not just because it's better for me, but because there is an audience participation track.
Nice.
Similar to the Rocky Horror participation track
.
Where you can laugh and ridicule the movie with the rest of the people who saw it at the premiere in LA. And
really?
And it was all designed for this. I mean,
awesome.
We always knew we were making a party movie.
Yeah.
And the characters do stupid things. There's a reason it's called Stupid Teenagers Must Die. I fought for a very long time claiming that our characters were not stupid. I was wrong. And so the DVD has that option. But if you already have a big group of friends and you've got Netflix and a good sized TV and a keg of beer, it's a good time.
That sounds like
it's a good time. It's a lot of fun. It does very well with the audience it's intended for, and it mm-hmm. does very poorly with cinemaphiles who take themselves too seriously.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
Sounds like something along the lines of the Evil Bong series.
It would be around that. It would be something like that. Yes.
Have you
Ginger
heard of,
Dead Man?
Have you
stuff
heard of
like that?
That?
Yes, I have.
I only heard about it recently.
I have not seen it.
I'm
a big fan of horror
sounds,
movies, even bad ones.
Yeah.
Like, my favorite series is the original Friday the 13th series.
Oh, nice.
Love it.
Yeah.
Love it, love it, love it.
Campy. Stuff, right?
I love the fun horror movies.
Yeah.
You know, Exorcist is the only movie that truly scares me.
Oh, yeah.
And to this day, just thinking about it will freak me out. No other movie scares me, though. And so, you know, I really enjoy the fun of them. And that's what Stupid Teenagers is. And Cheerleaders Must Die is a little bit more of an homage to like the 70s when things were supposed to be a little scarier.
Mm-hmm.
And unlike Zack Snyder's version of Girl Power, we're actually getting a lot of credit for the girl power that is in this script.
Right.
So yeah, we're excited. We should be shooting that this summer.
Oh, it sounds like a lot
so,
of
yeah.
fun.
Yeah, it's great. I like making movies.
Schmimcast!
I know you brought some stuff too, right?
I did.
What
I did.
What
I brought.
You got?
This is the soundtrack to a experimental film, I guess it is best be best to say.
Fun.
Called The Happening, not associated with M. Night Shyamalan. And it's actually gained some hipster prominence in the Fullerton area because it's gotten around to some people. And the movie was made for like $300. I like to say $300 over 30 days, but the actual shooting days were about 30, I think. But the actual time that it took to shoot it was maybe like a year. And it was just something that I worked at Disneyland at the time, and we just invited our friends over. A couple guys I knew wrote the script, and we just shot it on home video in black and white.
That's
because
cool.
That was the only way to make sure that it would kind of match up later color-wise. Edited it at home. It was an experiment to see if we could do it, and we totally did.
Oh,
and
like,
sold out a theater. It has a more romanticized vision in my head. I mean, I know it's not a quality movie, quote-unquote.
Right, right.
But just the sound is horrible. because we didn't have boom mics, we didn't have body mics, we had the mics on the thing, and people were talking quietly, and and it's about a big party,
okay,
the happening that happens every year. And in order to shoot the party scenes, we basically just threw a bunch of parties,
right,
and filmed it, and then had characters interacting during these parties.
Yes,
so it felt very authentic.
Exactly, but the sound was pretty shitty.
It was awful.
Right?
Yeah, it was awful. It took forever to try and get it fixed, and we made it.
You should have just subtitled it.
Almost.
You nearly.
Almost.
Nearly
it's almost watchable now.
Yeah.
It was. It was a movie fueled by Smirnoff Ice, because this was right when Smirnoff Ice made its debut.
Yeah.
So we'd go get like two crates of that, stick it in the fridge, and after people got liquored up, that's when the cameras would roll. So when it was all done, we want, you know, you need music for that. We didn't know anybody. They were like, we need to get paid for music. And we're like, fuck this.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's gonna pay for music? We don't got no money. The money that got spent was on booze. We didn't even count that in the budget.
You're like,
a smoke machine that cost like $50, and the juice for the smoke machine, which was like another $25. So that's $75. That's like three quarters of the budget.
Holy
right there.
Shit.
And then everything else was like paper and like decoration.
Yeah.
Dry ice. It was based on parties I used to throw in the late 90s that I don't remember because I have no memory of 1998.
When Chris Nolan, damn you!
And my buddy Scott used to make this thing called Pan Galactic Gargle Blasters, which was based on the Hitchhiker's Guide from the Galaxy drink. All it is just shitty vodka, shitty tequila, shitty rum, shitty gin, green food coloring, and dry ice. Yeah, no, I could tell by your face that the audience can't see that you understand how horrifying this
is. It sounds horrible.
Yeah.
I don't drink much anymore, so like anything that crazy.
Oh, it's
like
awful.
Way
it was bad. It was very, very bad, but Scott would make it for every party because it was just something to have.
Yeah, yeah.
And we did it in Dixie cups, and the really hardcore people or the really stupid people, you call it as you see it, would do shot after shot after shot of this in Dixie cups. And somebody got pregnant on the front
lawn.
Lots of sex. Honest to God. That's not a joke. That's not an exaggeration. Somebody got pregnant on the front lawn. We had a dude that do flips 1 year.
So these were pro-life parties, basically.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
Do flips.
And so he did flips in the living room. Oddly enough, he was dressed as Jay from Jay and Silent Bob.
Nice.
Yeah.
Are you sure it wasn't him? Actually?
Positive.
Yeah, okay.
Positive. I'm not going to call out names, but I know who everybody was. So it was based on this. So we did this movie about a party that I used to throw that I don't remember. Made up a bunch of asshole characters that were kind of based on people we knew, but taken to the total extreme.
Sure.
And then we needed music. I got together with a guy named Randy Cotiller, and he put together some music loops. I wrote some lyrics, and we recorded in his house the entire soundtrack, with the exception of a couple songs that we were able to get from other artists who donated their music.
Cool.
Unfortunately, the band that we got, that's
gone.
Broken up.
Right.
A guy named Charlie Charles isn't making music anymore. One of the things that meant that we couldn't do anything else with it, we got some music that the guy claimed he had the copyright on that he wrote.
Oh, geez.
Totally didn't.
Oh, man.
Years later, I was walking through a gift shop and I heard one of the songs from our movie and I was like, how did that song get in here?
Oh, no.
No way. So I asked to see the CD. It was from a Pump Mayo World Music CD. And all the songs that he gave us, totally ripped off.
That's crazy.
And I was like, wow. And I wanted to believe him so bad. I did the research.
Yeah.
I was looking into it. I was looking for his name and any kind of credit. Like anything.
And you couldn't find anything about him. You're just like, oh, just an unknown.
Yep. And by then it was in the movie, so we couldn't like take it to festivals. I'm glad we didn't take it to festivals now.
Yeah.
But at the time it was like, well, that completely hamstrings us. We can't do a damn thing. But a majority of the music was written by Randy and I, and we had a band called Bitch Tits, which gives you it gives you an idea about where we were mentally. When we decided to do it.
After your divorce or
this was
before?
All before. This was when I was actually just starting to date the wife that later, you know, we later got divorced.
Okay. So which track should we play here?
I think a track that really kind of encapsulates the tone of it all, and maybe we should just play the beginning, is the So Smooth song, which is the love theme from The Happening.
Funky.
Yeah.
That's me.
Yeah. I'm laid back. Watch your hair fall all over my pillows. I like the way your soft skin feels along my fingertips. Woman, I wanna lay you down. I put my dick on your head. You heard what I said.
That about gives you the tenor of what the rest of the music is like for the happening.
Woman, put my dick on your head.
That whole song is available on MySpace at myspace.com/bitchtitsband. At least I think that's the URL. I haven't been to MySpace in so long.
Yeah. I see you still have a MySpace.
I have. Awesome. Well, I gotta keep it because even though I'm not actually famous, I'm famous enough that I don't want my name stolen by somebody else.
Sure. Yeah.
So except for Friendster, I've got every social network name that I can get. And if somebody seriously has Curtis Anderson on Friendster, that's I'm funny. Okay.
You're okay with it at this point?
The only people who are using Friendster are in China. That's and, right. You know, and I'm not that global then, yet.
I'm going to put my dick on your head.
Yeah, that's probably not going to pass.
I can just see you making the moves on a chick and having that song.
Well, I like to think that the So Smooth song is the ideal thing for Valentine's Day.
Yes.
I mean, you play that song, some panties are melting.
Yes.
That's all I'm saying. And,
oh,
yeah.
Man. Yeah, I'm getting hot. Shit. I mean, should we play the other track?
Well, and this just takes it to the other extreme. That was inspired by Rammstein.
Oh! I noticed it has a lot of levels.
Actually, there was a true inspiration behind that song.
Yeah.
And it's from a video you can find online on YouTube.
Not just the yearning for
anal
sex.
Not just the yearning for anal sex. But
I want a dick in my butt.
Or my head. One or the other. I'll take what I can get.
Yes.
Or a bat.
But if you go online, there's a commercial for a German Learn English class. Mm-hmm. It's a very nice little family, gets into a little German car, and it is for German audiences. And they turn on the radio, it's like this hip-hop club song that goes, I wanna fuck you in the ass.
Are you serious?
I wanna fuck you in the ass. And that's the only line, and it repeats over this funky beat. Mm-hmm. And you see the grandparents like, Oh yeah, and they're dancing and they're grooving. They got big smiles on their face. The kids are in the back, like dancing.
Oh, my
and
God.
Then it says, "Want to learn English?"
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And so I wanted to get that same kind of feel.
Now that's a comic commercial, right? That's not a rock.
It's a real commercial in Germany.
No
for
way.
For a school that was teaching people English.
Oh, that's yeah. funny.
Yeah, that makes it even better.
The Germans and their sense of humor.
Seriously.
Schmimcast. So that particular movie is available. No, the other movie we talked about.
Stupid Teenagers Must Die is available on Amazon. Please buy it. Buy it in multiple copies.
Awesome.
I still owe money on that movie, so please.
Really?
Well, you know, distribution is a tough thing, and they take a lot of money. And really? I mean, so, I'm not here to cry. I really said that to be more funny than anything. But no. Buy it a lot. Give it out. Give it out to friends. I mean, you never buy too many.
And you go to the festivals and stuff too. Like I know you go to Sundance. You go in there like a bunch of times.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. It's a nice annual trip for me and the wife.
I've never been, so I have no clue what it's about.
It depends on how you're coming to it. If you're a film lover, then the opportunity to see a bunch of new movies, some that might never get distributed but are really good films, is great. It's once in an annual thing. Where your opportunity to see movies is really great.
Mm-hmm.
As a filmmaker, it can be a really great opportunity to get your film out there. The film market is one of the biggest in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And back in the heyday of the 90s, it was a time when you could get outrageous sums of money for your little movie.
But nowadays,
it's changed, it's different. But I mean, still, the opportunity to get distributed, that's still a major dream for everybody. And that's a big part of it. As a filmmaker who doesn't have a movie in the festival, you got to think about it like a convention, like any other work convention. It's a chance to maintain relationships you've got, meet new people. I don't like to use the phrase networking because I think it's asshole and pretentious, but that's truly what you're doing.
More or less, you're meeting people
and you're making associations, and I like to call it making friends, but that just makes it more pretentious. I mean, you're meeting people and you're getting to know people, and people are more willing to work with people they know and like than they are with people they don't.
What kinds of people are there? Like, is
film distributors,
everything?
Filmmakers, directors, like, producers, screenwriters,
everything down to actors.
I can cast
actors, actresses.
Yeah. After a week and after a week in Sundance, I can cast and crew up a film with just the business cards I get. Yeah. You know, we've gotten some great opportunities out of that. I mean, we've been able to secure partial funding for films. We've been able to get access to things that we wouldn't normally have access to, camera package wise, editing bay wise, and we've actually made a lot of really good friends, just film fan friends that ended up being friends that we've seen over the years and we see outside of the festival. And so it's just a really neat opportunity to get to know people who are also in the same industry. Especially at the level that I'm at. I make movies that are under $5 million. So, you know, I'm not hanging out at, not anymore. I'm not hanging out at Paramount anymore and like chilling with like, you know, big deal people.
Right.
But the filmmakers that I do hang out with are really passionate and really good at what they do. And we don't need $20 million for this movie. We can do it for $1 million. Let's do it.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's really inspiring. And it's just great. It reaffirms the reason why you do the stuff you do.
Someday I would like to go there just to like,
it's worth, know. It's an expensive trip.
I know. It costs money. First, like I was like, oh, yeah.
This is the first year we were usually sponsored by QSC Audio to be able to go. This was the first year that we actually had to pay for like our trip, and I was like, damn. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize how much QSC got for free. You know?
Yeah.
and when it comes down, it's like, you know, you do it because you kind of have to.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a surprise.
Shit costs money.
Yeah,
apparently.
No kidding.
It's just amazing to me that you're in the movie industry, in the film industry, you're really like part of it, and yet you come and do Shim Improv. It's so interesting. Like every once in a while you'll do a show still, right? And last year you did Zombie Love the Musical.
I did. Yes.
You want to talk?
You were
about
in
it?
That.
And I was in it.
Yes. I got to admit, Renee and I were second choice because we were getting married.
Oh, that's right.
We were getting married that same month.
Yes.
So the idea of a wedding at the same time as doing a show and rehearsing for a show seemed like a really bad idea. But when we realized the show was only going to be 45 minutes long, we were going to be working with you guys, and Eric really had no other choice. And the wedding planning actually changed significantly, so it wasn't going to be as difficult as we thought it was going to be. So that actually helped quite a bit. So all of a sudden, we were able to do the show. And I had a great time. I enjoyed it. I feel like it went pretty well.
It was a fun experience.
It was a good 45 minutes. I mean, I think everybody, including Eric, feels like there could have been more done with the show and given a little more time, it probably could have turned into something a little different.
I know there's some clips on YouTube
yes.
of the show that we can probably put up on the site when we put the podcast up too. Curtis basically and his wife play the leads in the show.
Yeah. I was the zombie. She was the human who loved me, and and we sang songs about it. It's rare. I really miss doing theater in general, and it's hard to be able to clear the time to be able to do a show. I mean, even for Schmimprov, which is maximum a night a week, you know, and it's really only 4 or 5 hours of your life that's taken out. It's still hard to be able to find time to do that right now, just because, you know, making the documentary, getting the next movie ready, and just the things that go along with that. I mean, it's hard work. There's a lot going on. So just finding the time to do Shmimprov can be difficult. So
to doing a play,
do a rehearsal, 6 or 7 week schedule, and then a performance schedule. It's tough, but I would like to do it more.
Yeah, it really is exhausting. It's a huge commitment. Like, I did shows all year last year, and
You were a wreck by October. And I don't say that to be mean, but dude, not only that, but
I'd gone through a lot.
Hobbit was an emotional thing.
Yeah.
You had other things going on.
I could have done The Hobbit
time.
For the rest of my life, though. I love that show. It was
right.
So much fun. I mean, it was an exhausting year in a lot of ways. And
I'm not surprised you started doing meth.
This year, I'm more kind of like, I might do a show or two. Like, I've been really like, so far, I've only signed on to one. Actually, two. One of them's like a one weekend deal. And then the other one, I have minimal commitment stage time to
I am
show.
A tree.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm like, this isn't Bilbo Baggins. This is like, I'm the hobbit hole.
That's dirty.
Yep.
Good times.
This wet little hole.
Oh.
No, it's described in the book as like a...
No. I don't want to hear anything
like
else.
That.
No, it's we're done. Like... Don't try and justify it. Ew.
Yeah.
Haven't we talked enough anal?
No. The hobbits were pretty cute in the movie, though.
They like, were.
You know, I mean, you can't say they didn't go through your mind at least.
No, but they'd break you if you bought them dinner because they'd eat so much.
That's true.
Yeah, you'd go broke. You'd be like, hey, let me wine and dine you. Wait.
But see, the Baggins end up being rich, though. So, you know, what the hell?
Buy me dinner.
Yeah, exactly.
Seriously.
Feed me, little fuck.
Give me that pipe weed. Shrimpcast.
Well, is there anything else you'd like to promote? Like,
Actually, I gotta do a series of plugs.
Okay.
So yeah, because here's where my Hollywood asshole shit comes into play, because I've gotta go.
Fantastic.
So I'm gonna plug it all and I'm gonna run. You can visit my Facebook fan page. Find me by searching Curtis Anderson.
On Facebook.
A-N-D-E-R-S-E-N. I Google very well, so you can plug that into your Google, or you can look it up on Facebook. Also, you can see the projects that we're doing at wiggyvonschtick.com. That's WIGGYVONSCHTICK. Seriously, just look at my page. There's a spelling there too. You can buy Stupid Teenagers Must Die at the Wiki page or at StupidTeenagersMustDie.com. And also, you can follow me on Twitter at Curtis Anderson.
Yay, Twitter.
CURTISANDERSEN. Not SON. That's other people. SEN. That's my name. And on occasion.
Not SON.
No.
No, okay.
SEN.
I got to be careful when I spell your name now.
SEN. I will rip your dick off if it's spelled wrong. And on occasion, you can still catch me at an improv show. Follow me on Twitter, and I announce every time I'm going to be at
That's right. That's
but, yeah, this was great. Thanks, buddy.
Like I said, I learned a lot about you that I didn't even know.
Shmimcast.
A few shows coming up. Improv, Shmimprov, every Friday and Saturday night at the Maverick. And the puppet players come back every first
Saturday of every month.
That's right. Saturday, April 16th, we're planning a charity benefit show called Let's Save
Let's
Japan.
Let's Save Japan!
Let's Save Japan!
Let's Save Japan! Let's... Now, I am so disappointed. I'm going to be in Louisiana during this show.
That's a bummer, yeah.
But I am actually a big fan of Japan.
Yeah.
A big Nipahphile, and been many, many times. And what's going on over there is as bad as what happened in Haiti, as bad as what happened for Katrina. And really, if there's any way that you can come out to help, please do. Because if anybody was prepared for what happened over there, it was Japan. And the fact that things are still as bad as they were, they need the help.
Yeah. So, yeah. It's horrific. I can't even say I've followed all the coverage, but like last weekend, and I watched the 60 Minutes thing, and it's like, it was just horrifying.
It'll kill you.
If you want to see a little tidbit of how bad it is, I'm sure they have the thing on the 60 Minutes website.
Yeah.
Any other New York organization.
And I know that a lot of people are panicking about the radiation. You don't have to, but Tokyo does. So, you know, anything you can do to help them out helps.
And the charity we are going to be giving the money away to is called Architecture for Humanity.
They're
going to
help build new houses for everybody, right?
I believe so. Yes, that's what they do. And their website is architectureforhumanity.org. It's real. We're not just going to pocket the money.
No.
it's going to
you guys did
cause.
A great job as an audience helping us raise money for Haiti. That was thousands of dollars that otherwise would have just been sitting there.
Yeah.
And we were able to get that out.
How did the format of the show work?
You know what? Actually, for what I understand, the format for this show is going to be similar,
right?
But we might also have auctions as well. And I'm currently working right now to see if, you know, I may not be very famous, but some of my friends are very famous. Mm-hmm. So we're going to see if we can get some items for that.
Yeah.
No guarantees. We really don't know yet. But otherwise, stunts similar to what happened at the Haiti show, where if we reach a certain dollar amount, somebody's going to have to do something either gross, embarrassing, or stupid. And if you've been in an improv show, you know your favorite times are when somebody does something gross, stupid, or whatever else I said.
Exactly.
Embarrassing. Yeah, and I promise Ryan Keel will probably be in a dress. Can't promise that, but he'll probably be in a dress.
Well, then I can't miss it.
Let's see Japan! Let's see Japan!
Also, at the Maverick Theater right now, you can see the Wedding Singer musical that plays through April 9th. Starting April 15th, you can see The Count of Monte Cristo, in which I will be playing a tree.
That's the Batman story before he was Batman, right?
Yes.
This is Chris Nolan's other movie about Batman?
Exactly.
Yeah, very good.
This is before he loses his memory.
Right.
And Count of Monte Cristo plays through May 21st, and then Chicago opens.
Wow, that's a lot of good stuff.
Thank you, folks, for listening. Thank you, Mr. Curtis Anderson.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you, Mr. Nick McGee.
Stage of star and screen and everything. You've been great, man. Thank you so much for sharing.
No, it was my pleasure. This is a good time. I gotta pee.
All right, pee time. Let's save Japan.
Let's save Japan.
Take care, people.
Here is the show. The show gotta go.
Thank you for listening to Shmimcast. Remember, for the latest episodes of Shmimcast, please visit www.shmimcast.com. You can email us at shmimcast@aol.com and hit us up on Twitter at Shmimcast. It's SHMIMCAST. That's twitter.com/Shmimcast. And now,
I wanna fuck you in the ass.
Improv out.
Oh, I
hear
Nikki.
Can you hear me now?
I can.
Oh, God, I'm a little too loud, I think.
Oh, this is nice. But I'm not hearing myself. Could I... Could I get the bass? Could I get the bass?
You want some more bass?
No. I was trying to be a rapper.
I can pump it up.
Can I get the snare?
Get my headphone.
I want the snare
on
my headphone. Turn up the headphone.
There's not enough snare in my headphone.
That's how you know you're street, when you're like, more snare. More snare.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. So do your thing.